Thank you, everyone. Actually, I was only given 25 minutes, so that's up. So, thank you. No? Okay. So I'm talking about the Great Migration and how to get the decision to say yes from the people who are in charge of the Windows machines. So yes, it's a talk about Linux on the desktop again, and how many times have we heard that? But we have a technical solution that's already there. We all know about it because most of us are using Linux. But the biggest problem is the societal, the political, in terms of companies and their mindset, and the community. How do we get to the point of people saying yes and doing the installation? So I got this question, the common question, is it going to be the year of the Linux desktop this year? And of course the answer is no, it won't be. But it will be the growth, the year of increased growth of the adoption of the Linux desktop. And if you don't trust me when I say that, then you can trust AI. In March 2025, that was the prompt I asked. And I'm not going to read it out, so you can just read it and someone wave when they've read it. Last night, I asked again. So it's a different feeling even after 10 months. But you know, if you don't trust AI, trust the stats. Now, I think actually we probably all of us need a round of applause for this, because we are now in the early adopter phase of the bell curve of the marketers and salespeople use. Linux server is up on the right-hand side, so we're already there in terms of the server. But now we're in serious growth mode for the desktop. And I think everyone knows about that, and even over the last couple of months, my company's getting increased number of phone calls. Everyone's talking about it. So I think this is a very... So can we give it up for all of ourselves? Thank you. Because it's amazing. So who am I? I'm Patrick, Patrick Fitzgerald. I've got a lot of time in tech, and I'm currently the founder of the Geeko Foundation, which is a way for OpenSUSE and other people around that community can get funding, and we take donations. And I'm doing the same thing in the Fedora community, which is about to be announced shortly.
Hello.
And one of the things that I've done in the recent past is we've been working with iLayer. I founded iLayer 20 years ago or something like that. We've been doing some interesting work with migrations and also cloud. We started our first cloud system, which is all open source, in 2008, which was actually before people started calling cloud. It was a Visio expression or icon back then. And we worked with Allied Irish Bank, Santander, in terms of doing actual desktop migrations. One of the things we did was 7,500 machines with Allied Irish Bank across every branch of their bank. And the end of that, based on that experience, I wrote some software, we wrote some software, which was a web-based version of the tech that we're using with Allied Irish Bank. And that was the end of seven. But right then wasn't really the right time to do that because of a bunch of reasons. So enough about me. Hands up, anyone here who's heard of Linux? Oh, right. Okay, that's great. Because I've recommended you, because he just spoke to me, to an IT director who wants to know how to get out of Windows or jump out of Windows into Linux. So thank you for volunteering. You're the expert, even if you might not think so, because this is what happens. We get phone calls from people saying, oh, you know about Linux, you help us with this. So We need to get, I mean, here's Horace. He's the guy you need to convince. He's the CEO, the CIO, the CTO of a company of indeterminate time, of a size, and he's asked me, what's this Linux thing, and can I save money? So I've recommended you. So you have to, you don't look like this guy, but you're the one who's presenting on, to this guy, to Horace, and he's got challenges, he's got limited budget, he's got Windows 10 end of life already here. He wants to somehow save money and stop spending money on tech that he doesn't think he needs. So you need to convince him to do a trial, a small trial. And he sort of smiles nervously, goes, okay. But he thinks, okay, this could work, because you've done a fantastic job selling the idea to him. We could save some money, we could minimize risks to the business, we could you know, do all these great things, but you need to put all that into a proposal to get him to say yes. He won't do it just because it's cool. He won't do it because he wants to put two fingers up to Microsoft. He's working in firm business assumptions, risks, all those things. But practically he thinks, well, you know, this is crazy. It can't work. You know, no one's. I've never heard of Linux. How could it possibly be a thing? You know, can I print? And do I have? You know, what about Microsoft Office? So you have to have a plan for all those kind of pain points. And you do have that in your proposal, right? Yep, great. Because if you don't have that, this is where many attempts to do migration fail. But there is a demand. I mean, the press is full of all these things, and most of those are 12 months old. There's new ones popping up in my feed every day, and it could just be my feed, my algorithm. I'm not sure, and I know this is meant to be really not meant to be a political conversation, but a big shout out to the American president for helping us along. So, yeah. Yeah, so we've all heard about this Windows to Linux thing. We've all heard that before, but you know, now, like right now, in the last 12 months, it's a whole new world. Apps are increasingly browser-based. People will like using Linux because of the speed, the reliability, and the lack of reboots. And who here hasn't had that experience of actually just looking at people using Windows with pity, really. And how many people here know someone who have gone back to Windows voluntarily? And I don't know any. So maybe other people have got different experience. So what else is different? We've never been here before. We've never been in this situation where Europe is so disliked by the United States. We've been happily taking the money or spending money with the United States until now, and everyone's realizing the risks. It is a completely different world. So as a reality check, it's not really about the tech, it's about the use case. And for some, the GUI might just be a web browser delivered full screen and that's it. That could just be what some users want or some businesses need. Could be it's not necessarily a full desktop. So the minimum requirement really you need to focus on is how do you do 100% functionality on day one with minimal, do it overnight, do a restart, and the machine is suddenly on the network, linked into Active Directory if there's an Active Directory environment or LDAP, and it works with the same username and password. And one of the things that's quite important is we've seen this before with things like the Munich rollout, where people, and my understanding is that what happened in Munich was that they decided to build their own repo or their own distro, which then became out of date as the people who designed that operating system left. So they weren't really They weren't linked into a commercial distro from SUSE or from Ubuntu or Canonical or Red Hat. And you need to focus on starting with a commercial distro, because they're the people who've got the support and the support resources and the technical resources and the consulting resources and the whole reseller network of how to make, they will know how to do this. And then you can work your way down and get other things in the picture, because there'll be companies that don't want to spend the money on the proper full price of distribution of Linux, but it could mean that they have a very small use case for a limited number of users. That's still a thing. And you could use a non-commercially supported but still based on SUSE, Fedora, Red Hat or Canonical. So if they have the ability to move up the chain as they discover that the things are working under Linux, go that way. So the larger the environment, of course, the larger the team separation will become, and the more complex even just dealing with the interior people, the internal IT people, it becomes. So you've got, when we were working with Allied Irish Bank, we had HCL managing the desktops, we had Irish Telecom managing the networking, and servers were managed by Wipro, and internal auth and authentication and AD was all managed internally. But try and get all those people together into a single room to discuss a migration project, and it can just take days or weeks before they're all got shared calendar ability, access. So getting them together is not easy, and you need to buy in, just deal with that. So Horace is hating the cost of the Windows 10 to Windows 11 migration because it's expensive. These are really generous numbers, in that the price of a workstation, an enterprise workstation, is much higher because of the RAM crisis, etc. The cost of contractors to get it done, because the internal IT people are always too busy, so you can get a contractor, and it takes a long time and costs a lot of money. We're looking at half a million. So, the answer is, well, it's actually not the answer to use a free OS, because you're not buying in. When you're a business, you're buying into getting rid of risk, getting rid of all the things that create risk. So a free OS, in terms of free to buy free beer, it's a nice idea, but it's quite difficult to pull off, and people won't, and companies won't buy into it, because they buy security. Now we've got many technical solutions, and we need to apply them to the correct problem, and the base cost of the OS is not the problem, really. So it's all about risk. Driving a car, you should be insured. You pay for that insurance. In the case of an accident, the insurance company pays. Otherwise, you go bankrupt. So certifications of OSs are there for a reason, to minimize risk for the businesses. That's why they pay for licenses. Now, these numbers are not massaged either. They're kind of generous. And if we do it the right way, it could be as simple as that, 10% of the cost of doing it the Windows way, which is just keeping the existing hardware and replacing it with Linux on an overnight basis. And you could do it group by group, but it can be done because we've done it. And an opportunity such as the entire EU public service, even 1% of that number of machines is still a lot. The current desktop penetration rate globally is about 5 to 6%. So 5 to 6%, if we get to that inside the EU public services, it's a massive amount of money to be saved. And in terms of support, internal team tasks wouldn't change much. You'd have to get a reseller to do retraining and then compensate them for that. And the Linux vendors would support the critical kernel issues with just like Microsoft do. And if you're lucky, you could just have they will also support a minimal desktop, bootable Wayland, no applications. But Microsoft does that as well with Windows. So we should do some level of Linux support license, part of which is paid to the vendor, part of which is paid to the community, and part of which is paid to the reseller or the reseller that actually sells the package, who also do second-line support. And of course, no manager ever said, give me less money, and what department ever wanted less budget. The Linux desktop requires a lot less support. It really does. In our experience and actually in industry experience sort of says that you get probably one Windows, if you're doing it well, one Windows desktop engineer can support about 100 desktops. In our experience, we're managing 7,500 systems with three people. And one of those people was actually just doing meetings and things like that. But the best thing is you have to be prepared and have the best story to tell to the customer, and you have to know what the customer really wants. So have a focus plan. Have a checklist of the minimum requirements that you need the customer to agree with in terms of hardware, software, and choose a single user group to trial, the simplest one. The ones with the least apps, the least dependencies on Microsoft goods, the least dependencies on Windows binaries. So that includes, because most apps are now browser-based. Time. So we've already got the OS. I'm going to move right through this. So if you come across a customer that's got gaming machines for their workstations, run, just leave, or just because the kind of dependencies you have to deal with BIOS and things like that, you walk away from that kind of scenario. But most of them are using enterprise systems with enterprise firmware, Wake on LAN, Pixie Boot, things like that. That's all very important. And the other thing is that those systems, enterprise systems are built to a standard, not to a price point, and that's quite important to realize. They're a little bit more expensive, but that's because they're built to a common standard and all the hardware is the same. So in terms of, this is why I'm saying I'm running out of time, I'm getting the wind up. But there's a way to go through it. You just build an ISO image. You build it and modify it according to the use case of the user groups. And you can use something like AutoYAST and Kickstart to build your end user employment. Run out of time. So scanning through these. One more thing. Active Directory is your friend because it'll enable you to do the seamless reboot into a Linux desktop using your Active Directory username and password. And there's lots of other things. Come and talk to me. I'm at the OpenSUSE booth and I'm just about...
Thank you.